and welcome to Those Who Can't Do. I'm Andrea Forkum, and I would love to tell you about all of the fun things that I have been doing this week, but unfortunately, I have been living in a dark, dark hole that is the corner of TikTok and Instagram that is discussing Love is Blind. You guys, the way I feel so heated about some of the choices that are being made on that show. And like, I'm trying to be empathetic because I'm like, okay, this is reality TV, but also we're not seeing everything. So I'm sure these people are going to be having conversations that we are not privy to. And so I'm trying to have empathy for these humans and the situation they're in. But at the same time, I don't want to spoil it either for people who have not watched the whole show to the end yet. But there are some choices that are made, some of the choices at the altar that are made, and the audacity of one individual in particular has me so heated, because I have a couple of people that were on that show that are my absolute favorites, that seem like just like the sweetest, kindest, most genuine humans. And it seems like sometimes they pair those sweet, kind, genuine humans with walking, talking piles of garbage. And I wish they wouldn't do that, you know? Like, it's great for TV, but it hurts my soul to see those wonderful humans matched with garbage piles. Somebody who also took a step into the reality TV world for a little bit is my guest today. Gaspar Randazzo was on The Trust on Netflix. It was actually going at like number two for a while, which was so cool. I have seen him do stand up twice, once in San Diego and once in Indianapolis. And I've been following him for several years online. He is so hilarious. I cannot wait for you to hear about the way that he became a teacher and how his performing has kind of grown and what his life was like when he was living on a little island and being surveilled 24/7. Without further ado, let's get to today's show. Today, I have Gaspar Randazzo with me, a comedian and 13-year history teacher. Is that right?
Well, I mean, yeah, I didn't teach history for 13 years, but I am in my 13th year of teaching, and I do teach history for the last 9 years.
So the basic gist. Wait, so what did you start with?
I taught sign language for the first 3 years of my career.
Really?
I did, yeah.
Now, let's kind of go back to where you got started with teaching. How did you become a teacher initially?
So it was like kind of an accident. I was never supposed to be a teacher. I was supposed to be a professional football player, but then I stopped growing in eighth grade. So Once I stopped growing, I was like, I guess I got to pick a new plan. So I went to college for business. Then I realized I hated dressing up. So clearly, as you know, so I didn't want to be like a guy who has to dress up every day. So then I went to college in China. And when I was in college in China, I didn't learn. Oh, I went on a dare with this girl. So basically,
I'm jumping around. I'm sorry. You went to China on a dare?
These are all relevant stories. Okay. All right. So long story short, which I just watched this thing that said, if you ever say long story short, you're about to hear the longest story of your life.
Right.
So I'll make it quick. I was in college freshman year. This guy came in. He does a study abroad presentation. He's like, oh, this is study abroad. And this girl who I didn't know, I was like 13 minutes into college. She looks at me and she's like, why do they do this? Like, no one actually would do a study abroad. I was like, I'll go study abroad right now. So she's like, no, you won't. I took the book from the guy. I looked at the girl. I go, tell me when to stop. I flipped through the pages. She goes, stop. It landed on China. I could have really, my whole life would have been different. Depending on which chapter it landed on, my whole life would have been different. It lands on China. So now I'm in China, right? So I go home. I tell my parents, I'm like, I'm dying to go to China. They're like, since when? I'm like, I always wanted to learn about Chinese culture because I wanted to prove to this girl that she don't make a bet with me.
And she didn't bet you though.
Yeah.
Gaspar, she just said, who wants to go there? And you're like, is that a dare?
In hindsight, like, I wish there was some cool story that I'm like, yeah, and then we hooked up. Nothing happened. But I don't think I ever even saw the girl again. Her name was Esmeralda. So if she's listening,
oh,
I know. And I was intrigued by the name alone.
Fair.
So I was like, I'll go to China for Esmeralda. But It turned out Esmeralda didn't give a damn that I went to China for her because I never spoke to her again. So I go home. I convince my parents I'm dying to go to China. Go to China. living in China for a few months, I'm like, what the hell am I doing here? I'm just like walking around China. I don't speak Chinese. I learned nothing. I come home from China after a few months. They wanted me to stay and teach English, but yeah. But my grandma got sick. And then I was like, oh, if God, my grandma dies, it's a 16-hour flight, 16-hour time difference. I'm not getting home for 3 days. So I was like, you know what? I'll just go home. So I stayed a few months, went home, get home. They put me in Chinese level 2. So now I'm sitting there. I didn't learn 1. So how am I in 2? All I learned was how to say, yi, ar, su, which means like 1, 2, 3, because we had a play that we put on for all these like kids in China and we reenacted Baywatch and I was a lifeguard and I went, yi, ar, su. I was giving CPR to a person. So then when I get to Chinese level 2, she's like, oh, ren qi ni hen gao jing. I was like, yi, ar, su. I just said that. And she's like, that means 1, 2, 3. Like, she answered me again in Chinese. Like, I knew how to say little phrases. So I was like, yeah. She's like, oh, niao pia liang. That means hello, beautiful. That's not what she said to me.
Okay.
Then I was like, look, I don't understand this. And everybody in the room was like fully Chinese speaking except me. So I went to her and she's like, drop the class. And I was like, I understood that. So I go to the bursars and I'm like, this is what's going on. I'm explaining. They're like, wow, you talk with your hands a lot. Oh, you must be Italian. So I'm like, yeah, thinking they're going to put me in Italian. They put me in sign language. So now
they like racially profiled you into doing sign language.
Yes, based on my hand movements. So now I'm in sign language class and it was pretty good for me and it went really well. And I was like super into it. And then I started going further in sign language. And then I was like, oh, I'll be an interpreter. So I was like interpreting. And then I was like, oh, maybe one day I'll teach sign language. So I went, I got a double double majored, I guess, whatever. Is that a master's? I don't know.
Yeah. No, a master's is a different degree, but if you double majored for your bachelor's.
Yes, I double majored, but then some of those credits counted towards my master's because I got 78 credits in sign language. It's a lot of credits. I know. So I went, I have a lot of education in sign language. So then I started, I put my resume to be a history teacher because that's what my degree was in, but I was interpreting on the side, doing sign language interpreting. And then there was a hiring freeze in New York City. This is in 2012. And there's a hiring freeze. And because of that, like everyone's resumes were just going in the garbage. And the principal like took mine and she just like skimmed through it and was like, what's this sign language like that you have? And I'm like, I told her that story basically. And she's like, whoa, this was not a short story. And then, she was like, would you want to teach it? And I was like, yeah, I just want to get a job. Like, I don't care. I'll teach, you know, sex ed, whatever you want. Like, I didn't want to teach that.
I like that just, that's the first thing you brought up. Yeah, I don't know. That you're was like, not I'll teach sex ed. And she's like, we don't, that's not what we want.
This is an elementary for you to do school, at all. Sir.
Right.
No, it was high school. So, middle school at the time. So, I did school. I went in and I taught sign language for the first 3 years of my career. Yeah.
Okay, well, so
the first 2 years and then, so.
And then you went to social studies.
Then, very quickly, quick story.
Real quick story.
They basically were accessing everybody because my license, I had a social studies license, but I was teaching an elective. So they were like, hey, we already got 8 social studies teachers. You're taking up a slot. You're teaching an elective. So I was like, wait, I could do more. Like, hold on. So they were like, will you teach computers, social studies through computers, which was a fake class, but it was like a way that they could get me to use my license and not get access. So I taught social studies through computers, which was a nightmare. I just was like, hey guys, you ever use a computer? All right, social studies. Like, who's ready to learn? Turn your computer on. Then they all played cool math games on the computer while I stood there and preached about, like, you know, Alexander the Great. It was great.
I love it. That's fantastic. I'm still confused about how you went from business to sign language because your initial major was business when
These
you started
are good
college.
Questions. So when I was in the business classes, we had this professor, he was an asshole, and he was like, oh, everyone buy my book. So he bought my book and then he would quiz us and be like, what was chapter 27? What did I say? And I was like, dude, I don't read. Oh. I can't even read. So like, I was like, I'm not reading your book. And then I was like, is this what a business guy is going to be? Like, I was looking at him. Then anytime you said, if you cursed, or said can't or said the word try. He made you put a dollar in a bucket. And I cursed.
What college? Are you sure this is a real college?
Community college stuff. I cursed because like I'm from New York and like, I don't know if I could curse on here, but like,
you can. You know,
yeah. Like, so like for us, it's just like a transition word. Like I just say it while I'm speaking. I'm like, oh, I got to go to the store later. I'm not saying it to, I want to the store. I'm just saying it. So I would just randomly say a curse and then he's making me put a dollar in this bucket. So I hated it. And then at the end, he threw a pizza party, which was weird. It was a pizza party at a bar. Then he bought pitchers of beer for us. We were all freshmen, by the way. And then it was me and two other kids went. We were the three people who contributed the most money. So I was like, I'm getting my pizza. So I went to get the pizza thinking the whole class was going. No one went except me and these two other guys. So we just sat there. They just drank beers. I ate like 9 slices of pizza because I put like $20 in that bucket.
You
I
was bought that my pizza. Money.
And then, so I didn't love business. And then I was just like, oh. And then when I went to China, I went for international business studies. And then I was like, yeah, this is not for me. Like, I was just like, everyone was like shaking hands. And like, I was like, I got my hair buzzed into a mohawk when I was in China. Everybody else was like, they brought suits. I was like, oh shit, I bought a suit while I was in China, a pinstriped, black pinstriped suit with red velvet inseams. I thought it was cool. Apparently it's immature. And I had to, it didn't fit in my luggage. I had to wear it home on the flight. It was a 16-hour flight. I had to wear it under my clothes because it was so fitted. Then I had to wear a bunch of clothes over it because I bought so many clothes while I was in China. So I had to wear all my clothes home on the flight. It was miserable. 16 hours wearing like 6 layers of clothes. And at TSA, they stopped me and they were like, sure, take off your jacket. I took it off. I had a whole nother jacket on. They're like, take it off. I took it off. I had a whole nother sweatsuit. I had to keep delayering. I had a full suit on at the bottom and no one spoke English. I was like the biggest in China. So I was like, I can't do business. This is not for me. So I came home. Sorry, God. I'm sure there's so many questions.
Why couldn't you? What was the problem with the pinstripe suit? Why is that not professional?
It was like cartoon mobster. It was like red velvet. You know what?
Was it like tailored?
It was so fitted. It was beautiful on me. Like I wear it to school every year, but I don't fit in it anymore. So now I just carry it to school. but I show the kids because I want them to see like this is what. It was $75 US and it was a whole beautiful suit.
Yeah, that's a steal. Do you have it? Is that what you were going to go grab?
I think I might have it in this closet down here because I wore it for a video recently. Ready?
Please get it. Yes.
All right. So here's the suit, right? It's just a regular pinstripe suit. But then when you open the suit, it's like a smoking jacket, you know? So.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now imagine I'm just casually walking around China. I'm like, what's up, everybody? Like throwing the arm open.
That's not velvet though, right? That's like silky.
Silk. I meant silk. Okay. Yeah, it's silk. And I paid extra for the silk. It feels nice.
I bet you did.
But, you know, it wasn't practical, apparently.
Right. And that you got that feedback from the TSA when you were trying to come back into the United States?
I got it from everybody.
Okay.
From everybody I met in China was like, what are you doing? Because they all bought nice, nice suits.
Right. And you went for the red silk lined.
And then I realized business wasn't for me. So then I came home. I actually switched my major to communications. Mm. Every class was watching a movie. And my number one like issue is if I sit in a movie theater, since I was a child, I fall asleep instantly. So like it's something with the lights being off. As soon as I sit. So every class we were watching movies, I kept falling asleep. I'm like, this isn't for me either, if this is what communications is. So I left that. And then I was like, whatever, I'll just teach.
I actually started as a communications major as well. And then I was going to go
for the same reason?
No, because I do remember there was one class that was about film and it was the like study of filmography or something where we watched like really old movies and we talked about like, oh, what is that one with the sled? And there's like the old newspaper, the Hearst people, I think. Oh.
Nightmare, not Nightmare, Christmas, Miracle on 34th Street.
Help, Rob. What is it called? Citizen Kane, thank you. Citizen Kane. They're like,
oh, Rob, I didn't realize you were still here.
Oh, yeah, no, they pop in and they'll help me, especially because they're all like Hollywood people. And so that's like a foundational film for all of like cinema. And we had to watch that and talk about, you know, how phenomenal
that,
like,
that
it was.
Stuff was brutal to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is. It is. And then I was like, oh, because the reason I was a communications major is because I wanted to be in radio. And so I took all of those classes, but most of them were just speech classes where we had to do all presentations all the time so we could be comfortable like talking in front of people. And then I realized that I didn't want to be in radio because all the radio DJs that I met were like deeply, deeply unhappy. And I was like,
Well, now look at you.
I know.
Kind of in radio.
Well, yeah. Okay. So one of the things that I didn't like about the whole radio world is that if you were a woman and you were doing the morning show, you usually had to do the gossip, like the Hollywood gossip and stuff. And I just, every time I did it, I felt kind of gross and icky that I was like talking about these people's lives, like some of whom didn't really want to be talked about at all. And I just was like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. So then Yeah. Then I switched to like being an English major because I'm like, I don't know. I like books. And
well, that's the thing. Like I started as a history major because I was like, I always liked history. And then I was like, oh, what am I going to do with this? Like, I don't want to work at a museum because then I'd have to wear the suit. So I was like, what can I do with this? And then I was like, oh, I'll just be. And my mom was a teacher. So it's not like I didn't know the field. And like, I've been to school my whole life. So I knew teachers. So
yes. So who would be like your favorite historical figure?
I mean, it would probably be Abe Lincoln, but, you know, I'm a big Abe Lincoln fan.
Really?
Yeah. Do you want me to expand on that?
Please do. Yeah. Why Abe Lincoln?
All right. So when I was younger, let me make this story a little PG. when I was younger, I had gone to, so for my honeymoon, we went to Abe Lincoln's birthplace because it was a tax write-off. So we were like, let's go, we'll enjoy, we could see the sights of Kentucky that no one wants to see. And so we go to Kentucky, and while we were there, I was always fascinated by history, period. So while we were there, there was a well, and they said Abe Lincoln drank water from this well. So jokingly, I said to my wife, I was like, we were dating at the time, I was like, oh, I guess we were married, whatever. No, we were dating. So I said to her, I said, it's irrelevant. we don't like each other now, so it's fine. We went to, there was a well, and I said, how funny would it be if I drank water from the well? And my wife's like, why would that be funny? And I'm like, well, but like we were dating at the time. So she was like, that would be funny. You know, like now right. She'd be like, I hope you fall in. so she was like, I was like, they said Abe Lincoln drank from the well. So I lean in, I drink the water from the well. And then we look around and there's a sign. Literally there were signs everywhere. And it was like, warning, do not drink water in well. Well is contaminated. So I was like, oh, like, we shouldn't have drank that. She's like, I didn't. You did. And I'm
She's like,
well,
that was you.
I'm like, all right, cool. So, and then like, I saw Abe Lincoln's glasses. I saw his Bible. I was like, wow. And then I stood in the log cabin where he was born. It's in a museum now, but I still like, I stood near the door and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And like, I was always fascinated by Abe Lincoln. Like, do you know why Abe Lincoln's face droops a little?
No.
Because when he was 8 years old, he got kicked in the face by a horse. And they thought it killed him because he was unconscious for like 3 days. And on like the fourth day, his family was like, all right, let's start digging the hole to dump Abe in. And then he woke up. So like, which is kind of how I want to go. So
no one even knows
if I'm alive or dead. So I jokingly came back to school and I would tell the kids, like, guys, like I would tell them all those stories. And I'd be like, guys, like Abe Lincoln and I, like our spirits are intertwined. Because I drank water that Abe Lincoln drank. And the kids would be like, you're freaking weird, mister. And like, I don't care. Like, to me, it's funny. I was a brand new teacher. I was like 21 years old. So I was like, I had pictures of Abe Lincoln all around my classroom. So the kids are like, yo, mister, like, low key, like, you're trying to like do Abe Lincoln. And I'm like, I'm not. I mean, he's very much dead. And so they would have pictures of Abe. They would cut out Abe Lincoln's wife's face and glue my face on it. So there would be all these photos of Abe just holding me around my classroom. And I liked it. I thought that was funny. So I left it. So then they were like, yo, it's not even low key anymore. Like, you're trying to like, you know, like. So then I left the pictures up. So one day I had a picture of Abe Lincoln. I was like, how funny would it be if I got this tattooed on me? So a kid's like, oh, that's crazy. Like, you would never do it. So the kid's like, I bet you $500 you wouldn't do it. So now, like, I'm a teacher. I'm brand new. I'm like, whoa, $500. Like, do I hear six hundred, seven, seven? So now I'm going around the room. Everyone's throwing numbers at me. So I'm writing it down on a piece of paper. Now I'm like, you know what? This is kind of a good idea. So I go to the tattoo parlor a few days later and I got the tattoo and I'll show it to you. I don't know if this is, if there's video on here.
Oh, there is. Yeah.
So I go to the tattoo parlor. I get the tattoo. I go to work the next day. I'm like, hey, Mike, you got $500 on you? He's like, what? I'm like, Joe, you got $1,000 on you? The kids were all confused. And then I stood on the desk and I was like, oh, hold on. Oh, it's a rolly chair. So
please don't fall.
No, it's fine. I'm in my own house. Then I show them. I was like, dan, 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 dan. And there is Abe for the rest of my life. And then what I...
So good, too.
Oh, yeah. And then what I do is I move his lips when I read the kids the rules of the classroom. So I'm like, rule number one, don't chew gum. And that like creeps them the hell out. And yeah. I like that. So I guess fair. Abe's my favorite president.
That tracks. Yeah, that makes sense. You know what's funny is when I lived in Virginia for about 7 years and I grew up in Southern California. I was never really super interested in history in general. But when we first moved there, I went over to a friend's house and I went into their hallway. And if those of you who are unfamiliar with living in anywhere like north of DC in Virginia, really, like you get like 45 minutes outside of DC, it becomes like the South, right? There is, I believe, still on the 95, a gigantic Confederate flag flying still to this day.
I believe
and,
it.
And oh, yeah. And there were all sorts of reenactments. They're like constantly, right? And so I go over to my friend's house and like a friend I had met at church and I'm walking into her parents' house and I look at the wall and there's these black and white photos. And I was like, oh, are these like your family members, like your ancestors or something, like your great, great grandfather or whatever? And she looked at me and she's like, Andrea, that's Robert E. Lee. And I was like, wait, who? Because again, I had not looked at like Civil War history in forever. And
no,
she's like,
my wife would have no idea who that is.
Yeah, like General Robert E. Lee. And I'm like, wait, sorry. You have a Confederate Civil War general on your, just on in your hallway? And she's like, well, yeah, he was widely respected by both sides. And I'm like, okay, but... and like that, but in that area,
it's
like
a whole different world. I remember we went to a gas station down there once, and like literally, I walked in, it was like a time warp. Like, I just didn't even feel like I was in like the same America that I live in. But uh-huh. They also feel that way when they come to New York. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
It was just like everything, like in the gas station was all like Bible-y themed, like t-shirts, like. I remember there was like a video game. It was like Call of Duty, but it was like Call to Duty. And it was like a guy like with a cross in his hand. And I was like, that's a very different Call of Duty than I am used to seeing.
Oh, yeah. And when I taught in Virginia, that was my first teaching job for the first 3 years. Very rural, like town where all the kids like came from farm families and stuff like that. And I like during that first year, I remember I saw this kid who had like a t-shirt from a local truck stop with the sleeves cut off. And then he had just gotten fresh ink and it was a massive Confederate flag across his shoulder. And I was like, is that actually, did you tattoo a Confederate flag on your shoulder?
It's usually popular in prison though.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
he gets there.
Uh-huh. And he's like, well, yeah. I did. And I'm like, don't you feel like maybe that's like not a good look? Like people might associate you with the KKK or something like that. And he's like, well, what would be wrong with that? And I was like, oh,
you kind of want that.
Oh,
you're into
got
that.
It.
Got
yeah,
it.
Got it. And like, it was that school was like 40% black and then like 50% white. And then there was like other demographics in there, but very few. And so it's not like it was all white kids in that class. So like you could feel the energy change as he said that. And I'm like, like all of 26 years old, my first year in the classroom. And I'm like, we're not going to be talking about the merits of the KKK in here. I can tell you that right now, just as a starting place.
Let everybody down.
Right. Yeah, I was like, that's not where today is going. Anyways, let's talk about Canterbury Tales and try to adjust, but it was not anything.
Look,
I was
sure
even
reading Huck Finn was a blast in that class. Oh, you know?
Thank God. That was when I taught seniors. So I didn't have to teach Huck Finn at that school. I did at another school. And that was brutal. Would not recommend having to read that one aloud or have the audio played or anything even remotely close to that.
Because you can't even like jump around. It's not even like you could skip. It's literally every page.
No, they, I want to say, Rob, I bet you could search it up, but I believe they say the N-word somewhere around like 293 times in Huck Finn, which is too many.
You know,
one is too many.
You know, it's funny. It's not funny, but one time I like printed documents, like, you know, because in history we have to always give documents. And it was just like it was like a someone's story, whatever. And like, I like briefly skimmed it. I'm like, all right, cool. This guy's talking enough about the South. Like, this is perfect for the kids to read. Give it to them. And then like within 30 seconds, like a bunch of hands went up and I'm like, oh, I should have proofread this. And it was like, the guy just like kept referring to the slave as the N. I'm like, No. I was like, well, guys, this is unfortunately how they spoke. I was like spinning it and I'm like, this is what was happening. And they're like, sorry, Rob, go ahead.
219 times.
That's how many times it said it on that short document that I gave the kids. They were like, wow,
it's so bad.
This is heavy on the N-word. I'm like, that is, yes, it is. And now you all know how they spoke.
Right. And in my early years of teaching, I would sometimes have my students popcorn read, right? And because I'm an idiot, I wouldn't always
just sweating. They were reading ahead.
Oh, pouring, right? And I, because there's that, and then there's Huck Finn, or there's Huck Finn, and then there's To Kill a Mockingbird that have that word in there. And there were times where I was like, okay, guys, we're just going to like popcorn read, not looking ahead. And then the kids would be reading, and all of a sudden you would just hear like silence. And I'm like, what's, and I'd catch up to where we were. And I'm like, we just will skip, you know? And eventually I got smart and we didn't do popcorn reading at all because it's garbage. But then also like we had a whole conversation around language or and all of that kind of stuff. But it was so painful, a painful lesson to learn.
Last week, speaking of To Kill a Mockingbird, last weekend I was in Rochester, New York doing a show. And I'm like going around doing stand-up comedy and I'm going around to people and I'm like, what do you do? Everyone was a teacher, of course. The whole guy, teacher. Finally, I get some guy. He goes, yeah, I'm a teacher too. I go, I don't think I believe you. And he goes, yeah, I teach second grade. I go, you do? What are you guys doing? What are you guys doing tomorrow at school? He goes, we're reading To Kill a Mockingbird. I go, you're a horrible teacher if that's true, because that's not age appropriate, which kind of worked out perfectly. And he was like, then after the show, he's like, I don't know. He wasn't a teacher, obviously. And then he's like,
right.
I don't know. That's the first thing that came to my mind. I'm like, oh, yeah, reading To Kill a Mockingbird to a bunch of second graders.
That would be a bold move, for sure. So speaking of your stand-up, how did you transition from doing all of the classroom stuff to then doing stand-up?
Well, basically, being a teacher is just like being a stand-up comedian. Because, like, you're in front of different people, you know, different groups every show, right? The classroom is a show 5 times a day. A show is a show, right? And then like you have different audience that are going to react differently to different things. You have a set that you're going to say, but there'll always be people that derail it and throw it off. And you just have to deal with it. And sometimes people react better. It's like you have to differentiate your thing. You know, if you're in the South, certain jokes might not work. If you're in the Northeast where the people are more like me and more rowdy and raunchier, then they'll work. You know, you got to cater to your audience. So I was like, oh, this is a pretty easy transition. So basically one day I was an extra in a movie about, they were like filming this movie in a school right by my house. And someone I know was in it. And he's like, dude, he's like, if you want to be an extra, like come down. They're giving everybody like makeup. It was a zombie movie. And they were like, they'll make you a zombie. Like you get your makeup done. I had no kids at the time. It was like, cool. Like whatever. What am I doing? It was the summer. I got my makeup done. It was fun, you know, whatever. And while I'm on the set, oh no, I did have a kid. My son was like 6 months old. So like, they're just like laying there most of the day. So I was just like home. I was at the thing I filmed. And while I was there, I'm joking around with everybody, having a good time. And this guy's like, yo, you're really funny. Do you do stand up? And I was like, no, I was like, I just always thought about it, but I never did it. He's like, well, if you want, I run a show. if you want to jump on, I'll give you 10, you know, 5 minutes or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds cool. Like, I'll try it. Like, I always wanted to do it. So I wrote my whole set. You know, I was nervous as hell, but I always wanted to do it. And I always backed away. So I was like, now I'm doing it. Like, because it's no better time than the now. That's not the saying, but you know what it is. So then, so I go down, I did it. And while I did the show, I did pretty, you know, whatever. I don't know. I guess I was okay. There was someone in the audience. So after the show, he comes up to me. He's like, yo, how long you been doing shows? Like, you're pretty funny. So I'm like, this is actually my first show. So he's like, dude, he's like, he was a booker. So he then booked me on a bunch of other shows. And then I was just getting booked on shows. And I didn't even know what the hell I was doing. I wasn't even, my set didn't even make sense. I was just up there talking about my life. I was just like, oh, today this happened, you know, and it was like no real comedy. It was just talking. And then, And then over time I was like, I should put something together for real. So I started putting but I didn't do like teacher jokes. I just talked about life. I did talk about the classroom a little, but talked about my kids, my wife, work, growing up. And then during COVID, I started to like really, like I was, because New York City was a mess, like everywhere, but New York City was like really a mess during COVID. Like they were like, oh, we think we'll just have you guys teach outside. Like, we'll just let everybody go outside and teach. And like, you've been to New York, like you don't go outside. Like, that's where right. You go to die. So like, they were like, just go teach outside, like bring your class outside on the trains, like bring your. So I started making videos, making fun of that. Like, I would go in my yard and have like my kids running around me, and I'd have like a leaf blower blowing, like as if it was like maintenance at the park, and I'd be like holding chart paper and it would be blowing away, you know, and it was just like people getting hit by cars. And like those videos started to like all get like pretty big, like viral. But remember, like in the beginning of COVID, like viral wasn't like as like now, you know, like,
yeah.
And like, so they were getting like a few hundred thousand views. And like, I was like originally getting like 200-300 views. So I was like, whoa, like this is kind of working. So, yeah. And then like all of a sudden, like I became like known like in New York City as like, oh, that teacher guy who makes fun of New York City schools. Then I started doing like all these videos making fun of the mayor at the time, Bill de Blasio. And I would do like whatever his press conferences were about the returning to schools, I would watch it. And then 30 seconds later, I'd make a video replicating it, making fun of it. And they were like coming out so quick that they were all going, like getting pretty big right away. So then the mayor's like office messaged me and basically was like, stop. like it wasn't the mayor's office, but it was like the mayor's like association with teachers, things like that. So I was like, I wasn't doing anything wrong. So his name, because he's not mayor anymore, so I don't care. His name's Bill de Blasio. I was calling myself William DeFazio, which technically is a whole different person.
Not related.
So then like, but that like picked up more and more steam, because then it like similar to the lady who told me not to work 18 hours a day. Like I just kept going in on the fact that they told me to cease and desist. So then people like loved that. And then all of a sudden, like my shows went from like, I was performing in front of like 4 or 5 people that were coming to see me, to then like selling out Caroline's of 280 people, and then selling out. And I was like, oh my God, like the show sold out. Like, I don't even know what I'm going to talk about. Like, and then I was like, all right, let me cater it to the teacher stuff, because that's where all these people were coming. So then I started doing more of the teacher stuff. But as you've seen my set, like, yes, it's teachers, but it's just crazy stories. They're not really about being a teacher. Like, you don't have to only be a teacher to understand it, you know?
Yeah.
And Everybody gets made fun of, so it's all good.
I think that's a perfect place for us to take a quick break. And when we get back, we are going to talk about how I met a superhero when I attended Gasper's show. Be right back. So, Gasper, I have seen you do your set twice now. I saw the first time in San Diego, and then I saw it in Indianapolis. But the first time I saw it, I was just like running to the bathroom, and I go into the hallway, and I think I hit you with the door
probably
when I came into that hallway, and you were standing there with, how would you describe the individual?
Lovely.
Uh-huh.
I would say an older woman.
Mm-hmm. She would not like that.
No, older sure. than myself. I'm 33. Mm-hmm. I'm 34. Yeah. She was older than me, but looked younger.
Her surgeons would be thrilled.
No, to, I don't think so. You think?
I mean, she... Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
Now I'm nervous to talk about her. She was lovely, and she was fully dressed in a Wonder Woman costume, and not really sure why. It's not like that's my thing. It's not like I'm like, hey, love superheroes, come on down. But one time, jokingly, like her profile picture on Instagram, so it doesn't really even make sense why she followed me, because most of the people following me were teachers. She was a workout instructor, but she said she just loved my comedy and my stuff. Heavy emphasis on the stuff.
The stuff.
I don't have any stuff for her, unfortunately. So she had a, like, she was like buying tickets to your San Diego show. And in her picture, she, and so of course I prompted this, I guess you can say, that I egged this on. But jokingly, I said something to the effect of like, make sure you wear your Wonder Woman outfit because that's what the profile picture was, or something to that effect. And sure enough, she did. She came in a Wonder Woman costume and she filled it out very,
very nicely.
Very, very nicely.
Like, yeah. So she, and I think it's underselling it to just simply say a Wonder Woman outfit. She was, it was like a corset top.
Which it was like, if
it looked, she crushed it.
She owned it.
It was like if a 13-year-old boy chose a Wonder Woman outfit for a woman to wear. Like
if I chose an outfit for her, that would have been the outfit that I would have picked for her. Yeah. And it kind of caught everybody off guard. First off, the staff came back to tell me that Wonder Woman was there for me, which confused me because I completely forgot that I ever told her to do that. And then Andrea came back. So now we're all just hanging out in the hallway. And usually I'm just like always nice to people and I talk, but I was nervous. Like I was nervous because not to talk to her, but just being next to her was nerve wracking. You felt it too.
Oh like, yeah.
It was a lot of woman in front of me, you know?
You did great. Your eyes stayed north.
I was locking eye contact, like we were saying.
Yeah, because she was fairly tall too.
She was much taller than me. Oh no, they were in my face. And then when it was time for the photo, I tried to make sure I was leaned as far away as possible so that if those photos ever went anywhere. Then I also had Sam Salem take a photo, which then sent to me, which then I sent to Joe, my friend, and then I deleted it off my phone. So that there's no trace that I would ever, but I want the photo to be somewhere in the world. So Joe has it. I just
for posterity.
I just don't have it. But yeah. But very nice woman. She was very nice. 100%. Completely very normal, nice. Very sweet, very, but
it was very strange to walk into the hallway though, because like I obviously, like you and I had been communicating at that point, and I was very excited about going to see the show. Had randomly run into a former coworker of mine who I hadn't seen in a few years. And so I had chatted with her and then I like ran to go to the bathroom and open the door and like hit you and Wonder Woman walking through. And I was confused because I thought either she was a part of the show, like I thought she was performing. And I think I said something to that effect. I was like, oh, are you like
one of the comedians?
Like, are you like one of the comedians? And she's like, no. And like offered zero explanation. She just like was like, no.
You know, a great act moving forward in my career would be to have her come out first and just do a little showgirls kick. Especially considering my audience is, you know, would be super into that.
Yeah.
Being the my wife's nightmare demographic audience of 21 to 45 year old women who come to my show. So I'm sure that Wonder Woman kicking would be phenomenal.
It would be great. Yeah. And she was completely unabashed and unashamed. She sat there in that outfit the entire show. And she
was a couple. And she sat across from a couple and she was just like, they were just on the table. And the poor guy in that couple, he was like, either this is the best night of my life or going to be the worst night of my life. He's like, why am I watching this show? And why the f- is Wonder Woman next to me?
Yeah, it was a very interesting experience. And as we were chatting, because I think we talked for like 15 minutes because it was like 45 minutes before the show or whatever.
Because I talk right up until showtime, then through showtime, then after showtime. It's
yeah,
just no
shocking.
Break.
You're
no
usually break. Very reserved and quiet.
Sam was like, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we interrupted somebody else's set that was next door. Do you remember?
Taylor Tomlinson.
Yes, who is now like the, doing the host of like, what is it, Late Night?
Late Night and all this other stuff. Yeah, we were just like in the hallway while she walked past us all and like was like, hey.
I know.
Yeah, it was funny. We were in the green room and Sam, this last week, Sam was with me again in San Diego. We were in the green room and he's like, oh, I don't want to talk to you before the show. Like, do you need to do anything to like prepare? I was like, Sam, this is me preparing. If I don't, if I stop talking, I just sit there with my thoughts, I'll blow my brains out because you know, it's funny. So I was in Connecticut last month and usually I travel with somebody that I'm friends with, like an opener, but I didn't have an opener with me. The guy I usually use, Jay Yoder, was, he was busy. So the club's like, we'll give you people. Cool. So I'm sitting in the green room. It's like 30 minutes for the show, 20 minutes. And I'm like, oh, they're not here, I guess. So I like linger out in the hallway and I'm like, are they here? And the owner's like, oh, they're sitting in the audience, just like waiting and they're going to watch. I'm like, they don't want to hang out in the green room with me. I was like, okay. And like, they didn't even know who I was. So then I'm just like, I was bored out of my mind. And at first I'm just sitting, I went on Instagram Live and like people are writing, like, aren't you doing a show right now? I'm like, yeah, in a few minutes, but like, we're cool. It's good. So I'm sitting in the, I'm sitting there. I was like, why am I doing this? I hate this. I went out in the hallway. The bathroom was right there. Everybody was running to the bathroom. I was just meeting people by the bathroom. I was like, hey. And they're like, oh my God. Like, I'm literally here to see you. And there was like 280 people in there. And like, people were like going back into the club and they were like then telling their friends and their friends were coming in. They're like, we heard you're by the bathroom. And I'm like, well, now I sound like a creep. So yeah, I'm here.
Right. Just hovering like there.
But I was like, I wanted to pick some people and be like, you want to come hang out in the green room? Because I was so bored. Then I realized that that would probably get me in trouble in my personal life.
Yeah, probably. It's kind of like how sharks, if they stop swimming, then they die. But for you, it's if you stop talking, then
is that true about sharks?
Implode. I don't know. Probably. Do they sleep? So. I don't know, man. I feel like, isn't that a thing? Because they,
if sharks like, stop swimming, they die. I mean, I love that expression.
I feel like that's true. I might have made that up. I'm not a science teacher.
I'm going to keep saying, I'm going to say, guys, I'm like a shark. If I stop swimming, I die. And it will have no relevance to anything, but I'm going to say it.
Yeah, just
I'll
lean into
you at
it.
The end.
No, don't. Absolutely do not. Oh my gosh. Okay. So one of the things we do on my podcast is we take questions from people and then we get the wisdom from whoever my guest is. So are you ready to like impart some teacherly wisdom?
Show when a movie.
Yep.
Don't even say it. Just show.
This is one I specifically chose because of the Instagram interaction that you had with somebody very recently, which you will get after I read the question. So dealing with teachers who are performative and phony, who virtue signal email the entire school to really brag about how amazing they are and how hard they work. How do you deal with that? And you had somebody recently who said they worked 18-hour days, I believe.
Well, all right. Like, so this woman messaged me on Facebook and she's like, don't you think teachers get enough? I'm over here working 15-hour days and you're sitting here making fun of the job and making fun of the profession. So I was like, lady, I don't even work the 6 hours I'm supposed to work. You're telling me you work 15. If you work 15 hours a day, you have horrible time management skills. Now, if you're including the 6 hours we're at work, fine, maybe. Then you're going home and working 9 hours. Like, that's a sickness because that means you're getting home at 3. You're working till midnight. Your whole life is work. I don't think about work. The minute I leave work, it's dead to me. Even when I'm at work, it's dead to me. Okay. So to me, like these people and like social media has glamorized like this, get to work at 2:30 in the morning so you could fresh brew a cup of coffee and make a crock pot breakfast for your kids. Like, get the hell out of here. I'm getting there when I get there. The people who are doing that, they probably suck as teachers. They're just overcompensating for the fact that they're not good. So they're like, let me decorate my classroom nicely. I'm a pretty damn good teacher. That's the only reason I could get away with the things I do. I'm a good teacher, but I don't film myself being a teacher because that's not interesting. We're all doing the same job. You know, like, I don't know, to me, and I have nothing against them. I actually personally, I'm friends with a lot of the people who do that stuff. I like it, but I do make fun of them and I make fun of them to their faces. So one way to handle it, you could just make fun of them, but maybe that's not for everybody. You know, it's like, it's like the guy who gives a dollar to the homeless guy, but then films it. And they're like, look at me, I'm giving a dollar. Like, you could do all this great stuff. And there's so many, and there are a lot of other reasons why people do it. So I will say, like, if I own a Teachers Pay Teachers store, where like I'm selling my, you know, my notes, then, you know, I do understand the value of like, hey, this is my day. And here's how I show the kids watching a caterpillar. And here's how I do this. Then it makes sense. But like, you know, it's a little much, some of these pages, but it's also become a thing. It's like it's, you know, it's just like everybody else. Everyone's trying to get famous in their own way, their own niche. You know, you and I used comedy and humor. If they're using the aesthetically pleasing thing, there's people who are good looking who are just being good looking. Like, you know, like here's
just
my...
existing while hot.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, here's me and my classmates just like, I don't know if that's good looking. That's just me flexing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, so I get it. That's just what they're doing. I got nothing against it. But if you got to tell people how great you are, usually you're not great.
Yeah. Yeah.
People
I agree.
Just say it about you. I think I said it when I was on the show. A lion doesn't need to tell people it's a lion.
You said it right that time.
Yeah.
It just is.
It just bees a lion.
It just bees.
Just bees a lion. But a lion doesn't tell people, just a lion. You know, he doesn't have to roar. He's just a roar. You know, he's just there.
He's just a roarer. Is that what you said?
Look, sharks don't got to swim. They got to sleep. No stops. Sharks just keep swimming. Finding Dory, Nemo.
Mm.
Andrea said that.
Please do not attribute that to me. Absolutely not. Yeah, the show is that he's referencing is somebody on TikTok, by the way, called it The Vault, which I thought was
kind of
funny.
People always call it The Vault to me. They're like I'll be walking down the street. Someone, guy came running out of a restaurant. He was like, yo, my man, you were on The Vault. I go, not me. And I just kept walking. Then I turned back.
You
goes,
did not.
Yeah, but then I turned back. I was like, I'm just kidding. I was like, it's called The Trust. He's like, I'm such a moron. I was like, dude, I forgot the name too. I didn't even watch it.
Yes, you did. Shut up. You had like a whole viewing party when it came out.
Yeah, well, for the premiere, but then that was it. Then I fell asleep watching the second episode because I already knew what happened. And then the third and fourth episodes, my kids had baseball. They had soccer. They had gymnastics. They had CCD. They had everything. So we couldn't even watch them the next day. Then I had to wait till Friday. Then my wife fell asleep super early. So I was like, babe, I got to watch the episodes. I need to know what's being said about me because I was reading things online about me. I didn't even know what they were talking about. So then I finally watched third and fourth. Then the next batch came out, same thing. It was a struggle because it came out on a Wednesday. I was at work all day. My students were watching it on their phone and I'm standing there like a jackass talking about Alexander the Great. And I'm like, oh, and they're like, you really didn't watch it? I'm like, no, but my mom did wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning because I call her every day at 7 a.m. and we talk the whole drive to school. So my mom woke up at 3 so she could watch the first 4 episodes that dropped so she could be ready by 7 a.m. when it came out. So when I called, I already knew like, do I look like am I going to get canceled? Am I this? Am I then? She's like, no, no, it's beautiful.
Yeah. What was it like seeing yourself like on, or like, did you feel like the way they cut it was true to how everything went?
That's a two question thing. Like, how is it seeing me? Honestly, my wife's, everyone's always like, how did it feel watching your husband? She's like, he's literally was exactly the same person he is on the show, that he is in real life, that he is on stage, like he's on Instagram. Like, and that's like to me the number one compliment. Like when people see the show, like my comedy show, people are always like, you're exactly what I thought you'd be from Instagram. And I'm like, cool, thank you. Like, I don't know how to be anything else, you know? A shark can only swim sharks, you know? So like, so to me, like the show represented me. I think I came out fine. Like I was myself on the show. Like, but it is weird watching it. I don't know if you watched it, but if you didn't, that's okay. I'm not mad. So
we've talked about it. What do you mean you don't know if I've watched it?
I don't ever want to, you know, like say to people, cause sometimes like people bring me on podcast, then I'll talk about the show and they're like, yeah, I didn't see it yet. I'm like, oh,
no, but I know have you like watched very, it. Very strong opinions about some of the people that were in it.
I'll tell you everything after.
Perfect.
but yeah, so I felt like there was a lot of things like that, like you watched the show. So like there was an alliance that they never showed. Me, the cowboy Brian, and the girl Tolu were an alliance. The three of us were super close. Like she was probably my best friend in the house. And they don't even show us interacting once until the very end. So the edit was, hey, Tolu's kind of the villain and the bitch. Gasper and Brian are like the nice guy, the funny guy, whatever. it doesn't logically make sense from a viewer perspective to watch the show, because then you're like, oh, if Gaspar and Brian are saying Tolu's nice and they're cool with her, then how could she be this big bad bitch? You know? Yeah. So like, they just edited our friendship out. And then in the end, when they're showing all of us close, all the commentary was like, she's lying. She's just acting nice to them because she's trying to save herself. And it's like, no, that's not at all how it went. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that was not the case. Like, we weren't trying to be nice. Like, she was always nice to us. She was mean, yeah, to everybody else, but always nice to us. That, like, as a viewer, was very hard to watch, because like, she would like call me after episodes aired and she'd be like crying and she's like, I'm such a bitch on TV. If they just showed me friends with you, I like, people would have been like, oh, she's actually nice. And I'm like, oh, you're a bitch. What do you want me to tell you? You suck. But like, to the point, like, I'm still like, I FaceTimed her yesterday with my class, because like, we're, aww, close, and my class always asks questions about things, and we had extra time because the assessment I gave only lasted 5 minutes. So we had a 40 minutes to kill. So I was like, let's FaceTime some of my famous friends. So we FaceTimed her and they asked her all questions. It was really funny.
That's
like they
awesome.
They were like, is Mr. Andazo annoying to live with? You know, so.
What did she say to that?
No, she said I was the only reason she was happy ever in the house.
Aww.
And then they were like, what about his style? And she was like, ugh.
Yeah, that was one really consistent theme throughout the feedback, was just that you were in like Costco clothes or Kohl's Cash clothes the entire, yeah, time.
One of my favorite comments was that someone said that I went to the most beautiful place in the world, living in the greatest place ever, and I decided to wear the same thing I wear to teach my third period class, because I was just like in a t-shirt and jeans and everybody's dressed nice and I'm in a t-shirt. And I was like, that's a good comment. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. One of my favorite scenes is when there's like all sorts of like deception going on. The music is like really hyped up and you're just coming out from an episode that was like kind of a cliffhanger. And they think you guys were about to go for a vote and everyone is talking about how upset they are and how they just don't trust people. And then they just show a clip of you steaming your pants. And what was the quote? What did you say? Like, I just want it to be known that I steam my pants.
I just wanted to go on record that I steam my clothes. But the thing is, like, you have to understand, you're filmed 24/7. So like, there's no break. Like, it's not like I knew that was going to be on TV. That was just like probably said to somebody like in passing. And then, yeah, like, that's what they chose to put in that intense moment. Everybody's angry. And but they also did it to show that listen, my wife died. She came back to life, but she died giving birth to my daughter. So like, and my son was born 3 months early. These people were saying this is the most stressful day of their lives. There's nothing to me. Being there, like anything that they said, anytime they fought, I'm like, guys, 150 kids curse me out every day. My wife died. My son almost died. Like, you know what I mean? I was like, I'm good. Like anything pressure that you guys think, like we're on freaking the guy who invented Google's house right now, eating food all day, living on an island. Like you guys are stressed about being on a show. Like, give me a break. So like, and I, yeah, kind of always approached it like that. Whereas in like, all the people were always intense. And like, there was that other part they have, like everybody's like having this like heartfelt moment. They got me freaking suntan in my face, spraying myself with suntan lotion in the eyes. But once again, yeah, it's like you're filmed 24/7. So it's like anything you do, you're like, oh, I do that? Like that was weird to watch. Like I touched, yeah, my hair a lot, but I was always touching my hair because the wind was always blowing. So I was always, yeah, trying to get my hair down, but like, you just forget, like I would go in my room and go to like take off my clothes. And then you're like, oh yeah, I'm on, like there's cameras. The minute you walk in your room, there's roving cameras that just turn and start following you. Cause there's a control center of like, there's 49 cameras or something like that through the house. So as soon as you walk into a room, the control center moves the cameras at you. So like all of a sudden you're taking off your clothes and then like cameras looking at you. So then I would be like, oh, hey, Taylor, to like one of the camera girls. And I'd be like, how you doing? I would like slowly take it off. And then they would like turn the camera the other way. And I'd be like, oh no, you can't escape. And I would go to the other side. But you start going crazy because like you're, yeah, just in this house all day being filmed. Like, you know, everything, just, it's a lot of filming.
Oh my gosh. So I always thought that there was like people walking around with boom mics and like cameras, nope, but it's just, everything's just set up.
So there's like there was 49, 39 robo cameras just in every room. And like, that sucked too. Like one night, like I was like ready to go home. I was like, get me the out of this house. Cause like, I would just miss my kids. It was nothing to do with the house. I missed my kids. I was like looking at a picture of my daughter and I was just like missing like her voice. Like I was like forgetting what my kids sounded like. Like it was depressing. I couldn't talk to them the whole month. And I was just like, I want to go home. And I like started like tearing up. And then like, I just see like the robo camera like zooming in. I was like, let me cry in peace. I was like, I hate you guys. And like, you know, but they would like laugh at stuff like that, you know, but, so the robo cameras picked up most things, but let's say like me and you are in a fight and we're like kind of off to the side and like the cameras don't have like a great shot of you. Someone will come like running in like Maury and like poach up and just like get like a better, more detailed camera shot. But there was nowhere you could go in the house that you were not on a camera somewhere. But like wanted, if it was like a real conversation, they wanted like better coverage of it.
Did that like heighten it if somebody like popped out and like, were you like, okay, we better get more intense?
No, because to me, I never changed anything about my, like, you know what I mean? So like, I would be like, oh, hey, Rick. And they're like, stop talking to the cameraman. Because like also like what starts messing with you is you're in the house with the same 10 people. Then it's 9 people, 8 people, 7 people. And it's just 24/7 of the same people conversations. So like anytime I had an opportunity to talk to somebody else, I was taking it. So I was just like, hey, Andrea, hey. And he'd be like, stop, don't talk to us right now. I'm like, come on, I'm hurt. I need to go see a medic. Like, please. Like, I would just be like holding my leg, like, help me. Like, cause I, you know, you just want to get away from these people.
That's fair. Yeah. That makes sense. All right. So before I let you go, can you share kind of anything that you have coming up, any tour dates or anything like that where people can find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at StandUpRandazzo. Like imagine like you're standing up and then my name is Randazzo, or like stand-up comedy, probably.
Oh, is that what that's about?
It's probably better. The second one probably makes more sense. less about the standing up, more about that. You could find me there on Instagram, StandUpRandazzo, or you can visit my website, GasparRandazzo.com. I will be on tour. I am going to be in Poughkeepsie, New York, New Brunswick, New Jersey, Hershey, Pennsylvania, Chicago, Illinois, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Long Island, Boston, Washington, D.C., Tampa, Detroit, Staten Island, Austin, Texas, Cincinnati, and Columbus, Ohio. So that's like from now till the next few months. So you could get tickets at GasparRandazzo.com. You might hear some of this stuff again. You might see some shark quotes.
Oh my God, please do not add shark quotes to your set.
Some shark stuff. I'm like a shark, baby. Once I stop talking, I die.
On that note, thank you, Gaspar, so much for coming today. I appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we'll be right back.
Bye.
Welcome back. So I hope you guys enjoyed my conversation with Gaspar as much as I did, with all of the stories from his experience in the classroom and on stage and on the trust. He has the ability, you know, because there are some stories that, you know, I have heard from his sets from seeing him live. And it does not seem to matter if I've heard it before, because his delivery is just so on point that it absolutely cracks me up. It was so fun seeing him on The Trust on Netflix. So if you guys have not checked that out yet, please do. He's exactly who he was on this show and who he is in the classroom. That's the person you see on The Trust, which is really just fun to see a teacher who is out there being hilarious and being a good human and seeing them on a show like that. So definitely go and check that out. Now, I wanted to share some of the things that your students are doing. This one, I don't know, it feels in keeping with the vibe of Gaspar. Because I think he might agree with this statement, but a student started an essay with, for many people, Red Lobster is the pinnacle of class. And that to me is just, number one, something that I feel like Gaspar would fully agree with. But also, I remember vividly when I started dating my husband a bajillion years ago, we had a whole conversation about the moment he realized that Red Lobster was not a gourmet restaurant, because when he was growing up, like, that was like a celebration meal, a celebration location was, you know, you go to Red Lobster and you get those Cheddar Bay biscuits and you just live in the glory of that moment. And so it wasn't until like he had joined the Marine Corps and had been out of the house for a couple of years, and he realized, like, some people just wanted to go on a Tuesday night to Red Lobster. And he was like, is there a special, is it someone's birthday? Like, is there a special occasion? And that they were like, no, dude, we just want some biscuits. And he realized, oh, maybe it's not such a big deal. The second one you guys turned in was that a student lost her nose ring, so she smashed a plastic pen to make a suitable shard to use, and like stuck the shard of definitely unclean plastic in through the hole she had for her nose piercing. Which, that kind of like choice for chaos is what just I live for in the classroom. Because if you were to do that in many, many situations, it would be too stunning to even like continue a conversation if you saw someone do that. But if I was teaching and I saw a kid do that, I'd be like, well, they're a problem solver. They figured out a solution to that issue. So respect, you know, you've got to do what you've got to do. If you have something that has happened in your classroom and you want to share, I want to hear about it. You can reach me on Instagram at Educator Andrea, or you can email us at andrea@human-content.com, or you can get us on TikTok at Human Content Pods. And this is a new podcast, so we so appreciate you guys listening and subscribing. And if you want to leave a review, you might even get a shout out in one of the future episodes. You can catch full video episodes every week on YouTube at Educator Andrea. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. I am your host, Andrea Forkum. A very special thank you to our guest, Gaspar Rendazzo. Our executive producers are Andrea Forkum, Aaron Corney, Rob Goldman, and Shanti Brooke. Our editor is Andrew Sims. Our engineer is Jason Portizo. Our music is by Omer Benzvi. And our recording location is the Indiana State by College of Education. To learn more about Those Who Can't Do's program disclaimer and ethics policy and submission verification and licensing terms, you can go to podcasterandrea.com. Those Who Can't Do is a Human Content production.